Good evening and welcome to tonight's Monroe City Council meeting. This is the retreat and workshop for March 27, 2018. The time right now is 5:30 p.m. We started this evening with dinner at 5, and it is now time to call the meeting order. Ms. Atkinson, will you please call the roll?
Certainly. Council members present and establishing a quorum are Cuddaback, Gamble, Davis, Hanford, and Scarborough.
Thank you. We heard from Councilmember Rasmussen last week that he would not be here this evening, and we heard from Councilmember Camp just about 20 minutes ago that he would also not be here this evening. So unless there's objection, we'll go ahead and consider them both as excused absences. Councilmember Cuddaback, can you please listen to the
yes.
Thank you.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. The first item we have on our agenda this evening is AB 18-025, 6-year strategic plan. And this is coming from the administration. And Ms. Knight, are you leading us off?
I am leading us off. I wonder if I can get the mouse to work. Oh, there's a mouse. That's why I don't work.
Yeah.
Is it on there?
Oh, there it is.
Looks like it's on my version.
The management team, senior leadership team, and the mayor met back in December, and we had a conversation around what should the city be working on for the next 6 years, 5 to 6 years. And it really came out of a conversation that started even before that about the 5-year strategic plan. Because one of the things that we need in order to put together a 5-year strategic plan for the city council is really to know what is it that you all, together with the management team and the mayor, what we together as a community should be working on for the next 6 years. So we took a first look at what we're currently working on and then some of the things that were discussed by the mayor in his previous recommended budget and some of the things we're looking forward to in the next coming year. And so the purpose of today's conversation is really just around what is it that we think as a community we should be focused on. So we provided some detail and some level of background about some options, and what we're hoping to do then is take the conversation that we have today, inform some of the work that the mayor's going to be doing on his recommended budget, and then come back to you in July and kind of align all of those things together in a single plan, what we hope to be in a single plan. So today's focus is really just around the reviewing the steps to adopt the strategic plan, and then looking at the draft strategic plan that the senior leadership team and the mayor put together. We also talked just briefly about, what are the community's core values, what are the council's values, what are the mayor's values, what are the staffing values, and whether or not we should come back and revisit those core values, vision and mission. We have some of those things already in our comprehensive plan, for example, and those things may inform what we're working on as far as the strategic plan is concerned, but we didn't want to just assume that those things in your mind are already in place, and whether or not we should come back and at least take a second look at them before moving forward. And then finally providing direction on whether or not this is a list of issues that we should be working on and projects that we should be working on, or whether or not there are some things on this list that you'd like to take off and others that you'd like to add. So this really is looking at things from a very high level perspective, so from the 50,000 foot level, as opposed to where sometimes we operate during council meetings, which is, down on the 10,000 foot level. So that's the purpose. So what we're really going to be talking about at the beginning and through most of this meeting is where are we now, where do we want to be, and the real question is how do we want to get there, right? So what are the projects that we need to be doing in order to achieve that long range vision? So what we have noticed, both again as the mayor and the senior leadership team, is that we've done a lot of planning, but what we haven't really done is kind of a look back to see how do we implement all of those plans that we have together. So our focus today has really been just on the comprehensive plan. And that's why when you take a look at the packet that we provided to you, what you see is the vision from the comprehensive plan, and then you see that chapter two, which presumably boiled everything that was in your comprehensive plan kind of down into, here's a list of things that you should be working on. And that's the list that we ultimately worked off of. And then where we're going to go from here is linking that to your financial resources as part of that five-year forecast. And so we're going to come back to you at your meeting in July with a five-year forecast, and based upon the conversation that we have today, those projects that you say you want to be working on, those will be the projects then that we incorporate, so you can see, well, what does that look like then when we marry up our strategic plan with our financial resources? Then we'll come back, of course, with the mayor's recommended budget and adopt a budget in December, and presumably that'll narrow us down then to what are those projects that we're going to be working on in 2019, and then set us up moving forward in 2020. Because most of the things that the community works on, the city, are really multi-year projects. And so unless we're starting those things today, they won't happen for us in 5 years. And that's the reason why it's really important that we marry up then what your strategic plan is with your financial forecast, because we have to ensure that we're funding far enough ahead to get the resources that we need in order to implement the projects that are on your short list. And then finally, those translate into department work plans in 2019, so those are all the things that we do on the ground. And then we have an annual review and adjustment process, and we come back to you again in January, and we kind of start this whole process over again that we started this year, which is what's on the strategic plan, what is it we want to be working on, what's the five-year forecast, and we just keep rolling that along. And that allows then for your adjustment period as priorities change and opportunities arise. So that's what we're working on from today. So the strategic planning steps, there are multiple strategic planning steps out there, and I just tried to find one that would keep things as simple as possible, because from my perspective, we've done a lot of planning already in the comprehensive plan, and I don't know that anybody's interested in going back and revisiting that. We just adopted it in 2015. And you're going to be taking a look at the strategic your comprehensive plan again in the next 8 years, and part of what Ben's going to be talking about after we talk about the strategic plan is, you know, what direction do you want to go as far as density and growth is concerned, and so you'll have an opportunity to come back and look at that. I will say, though, that given the feedback that we've been receiving from your Economic Development Advisory Board, and they're looking at this exact same information, right? So they're looking at your comprehensive plan and the vision that was in that. Hi. Yeah, no, absolutely.
Well, it's not something.
Sneak.
And I do think this is where we're happy.
I can share with
you. So what your Economic Development Advisory Board has been struggling a little bit with, and you can see this again in your agenda packet, is the vision really isn't looking far into the future, and it's not really something that kind of lays out a clear understanding of what the city wants to be when it grows up. What it's been described as really is a bullet list of items. But again, you know, thinking about the strategic plan that we're working on today, I think that's something that you just need to kind of put in the back of your mind and kind of keep it back there about whether or not you want to have a vision that kind of more fully describes where you want to be in the future. So this, you know, where are we now, the compelling need, the mission, and what's happening in the environment, it's my assumption, and I think the mayor's and the senior leadership team's assumption, that all of those things have been identified already in your comprehensive plan. So this step in the strategic planning process has been done, along with, I think, this is where we are now, where do we want to be, right? So reviewing the vision, reviewing the programs, looking at your organizational capacity, and then how will we get there is really your strategic plan. And again, all of this was discussed with the mayor and the senior leadership team in our meeting in December, and what we're really looking for is just some input then from the city council and some direction as to whether or not the list that we came up with makes sense to everybody. And then finally, just want to remind, you know, when we're looking at a strategic plan, there's a tendency to want it to make it a menu of items, and to make it more complicated than it really needs to be. And so what we're hoping today, too, is that we really are talking about prioritizing. So there should be some things that need to come off the list of new things are being added, particularly since we may not have this organizational capacity in order to actually achieve everything, right? So if we want to add capacity, then we need to talk about, well, what things are we going to drop off the list, or how are we going to raise more resources in order to achieve those goals?
So any questions about the strategic plan? Mayor, any comments you want to add in?
So I don't want to presuppose that the first two columns that are there that Ms. Knight pointed out that we, from a staff perspective, feel like we've already sort of taken care of column one and column two. Does anybody feel differently from council? You're the policy arm, and if for some reason you think we need to revisit column one or column two, I want you to know that we're not passing over that. So, any thoughts? Okay. So, please go ahead and continue. Thank you.
So, I did want to just briefly include where are we now and where do we want to be. So, just as a reminder, because it has been a couple of years since we adopted the comprehensive plan. That is the 2015 comprehensive plan, and this is the vision that was included in that comprehensive plan. So again, a bullet list of items, you know, not kind of your standard vision statement, and I'm sure there was some thought put behind wanting to do it this way as opposed to having something, you know, that was more forward-looking. And what this translated into then, your vision statement, were these set of 8 goals. And so these were the 8 goals, again, that were adopted under comprehensive plan. And what we've tried to do as a mayor and management team is to then pick out what things were in these lists. And you have chapter 2, so you can see each one of those goals and the list of projects that were included. And some of them are difficult to define. And so what we've tried to do then is to formulate a list of projects that fit under each one of those 8 goals. So here's your 8 goals here. And here's the list of projects that we have under each of those 8 goals.
Councilmember Scarborough?
Back on the last, what did you mean by keep Monroe compact? Last goal.
So I didn't write this vision statement. This was adopted prior before I came on board. So maybe if there was somebody that was part of that process could talk about what they meant by keep Monroe compact.
So in a general sense, I'll look to our community development director in particular to add to this, but usually keep Monroe compact means keep the growth within the city limits and the identified urban growth area. The idea being that we don't want to become a sprawling suburban community that goes into the farmlands and the floodplain and the wetlands that are around us and up the hills. Some of the feedback that we received during the comp planning process was that people like seeing, you know, the hills with trees on over here. They like being able to be at Lake Tide playing baseball and seeing cows on the other side of the fence.
Okay.
That kind of stuff.
Thank you.
That's exactly it. Yeah.
Any other questions then about the vision statement or the goals? So what we did then back in December, Mayor and senior leadership team, was then talk, well, how will we get there? Right? So what projects are we proposing over the next 5 or 6 years that will help us achieve those goals? And so what we did is we took each one of those 8 goals and then identified the projects that we were already currently working on or that we understood were priorities for mayor and council and put them under each one of these goals then. And you'll see some of them are repeated. So for example, update development regulations is going to potentially address environmental and resources, and it's also going to address affordable housing, right? So these are things that are currently on the list of projects that we're working on, and we just wanted to ensure that everybody understood that they weren't necessarily mutually exclusive, and some of them went into multiple categories. And so what we're really looking for from council at this point is there anything that's on this list that you don't support, that you just think the city should not be working on this right now, the timing's not good, or it's just not a priority? And on the flip side of that, is there anything on this list, is there anything that's not on this list that you think that we should be working on?
Councilman Gamble.
On the safe and secure piece, I would like to see a bullet there in regards to our partnership with school and the SRO officer piece.
Okay.
Program. Not an officer.
Okay. Maybe something a little bit more broad, which is partnership with our schools, law enforcement, or
law enforcement partnership, strategic partnership, whatever.
School safety, that comes to mind? Would that be
Just
better bullet point then?
Something that is more encompassing, but it's definitely something that we need to have a part of that plan.
And I think this brings us the perfect point about why revisiting this every year is important, right? It's something that just came up, wasn't thought about in 2015 when we first put the plan together, and definitely a priority today.
And these aren't necessarily in order in each column.
Not in any order of priority. No, and the next slide we'll talk about, there it is, where we put it into years. So we'll have an opportunity then to shift things back and forth too. But yeah. Right now we're just trying to make sure that everything that, you know, if there's something that's not on here, Ms. Jason or Mr. Campbell suggested, we'll put it on here.
No, it's Jason.
Thank you. Like, oh my gosh, it's Mr. Campbell.
No, it's just Jason.
Councilmember Campbell.
Councilmember Cutback.
Can you talk a little bit more about how the council chambers remodel is how it applies to being a regional destination? The whole campus did the council chambers remodel, and how does that relate to being a destination?
My only thought there was just that as the city is growing, we're going to need to accommodate more space and ensure that we're providing that space for City Hall. I think there's something that's missing in this just because it is a community vision, and that is kind of the efficiency of the operations of delivering service to the community. So this is the only place that I can figure out to actually put that in. I don't know that it fits. There should be maybe an other category or an internal efficiency.
Capacity building or something. Organizational capacity building, something around that. And that brings up the question, if we're doing something that doesn't necessarily fit into our strategic plan, how will that be handled?
That's really, you know, between the mayor and the city council as to whether or not, just because it's not part of our comprehensive plan vision, I think, again, there's those internal efficiencies that you want to ensure that you're doing in order to deliver these services. And I think City Hall remodel is a part of that. Enterprise resource planning, your ERP is a part of that. So IT investments. But those don't line up necessarily with your vision coming out of their comprehensive plan, because that's really a community's vision, right? It's external as opposed to internal operation.
So if I could tag on to that, one of the things we don't see up here is we don't see anything about finances, right? So there are probably some things up here that aren't part of the overarching goals, which then brings up the question, should they be on here, or should we remove things like the council chambers remodel, the city campus facilities report, that kind of stuff? There's things we're still going to work on, we need to, but is that something that you all would like to see in this sort of a strategic plan? Or do we create another bucket?
Well, I think you almost have to create another bucket, so
okay.
For organizational capacity or mm-hmm. something like that, where whether it's by per department or per the whole city, because that's important. And that's outside, like what you were talking about, not the community vision, but it does have an important part in your strategic plan.
So maybe service delivery? The whole point for delivering the services, and so we need personnel, we need facilities, we need IT infrastructure. It's all that support stuff that goes into delivering the services and the projects.
Yeah, I mean, in my mind, it's organizational capacity. It's how you're, you know, how you grow as an organization and increase your capacity to in order to do this work.
So we'll create a new bucket then and figure out what to call that, and then move all those things that are really organizational focused.
One point I was going to make, though, about having the city campus facilities report there in a regional destination, mm-hmm. there's a lot of city halls anymore that are being designed or designed to be for purpose.
Right.
Especially with regards to having a community room that can be used by your service organizations or groups beyond just the local government, that tends to be more community-based and then does fit very nicely to make you a regional destination. So just something to consider there.
Yeah, I thought about that. I mean, I think that's kind of a byproduct of remodel, like we would have a room big enough for that, but that, my opinion, isn't the driving force behind the community or the campus remodel, you know?
No.
I appreciate that.
Anything further, Councilmember Pena?
No.
Councilmember Scarborough?
Excuse me, utilities and transportation. Turning place, is that the continuation of behind Albertson?
Okay. Anything further on this slide?
Okay, one more thing.
Councilmember Cutback?
Did So just looking at it, like the quiet train designation, I could see that in a couple areas also. I could see that as under regional destination. I mean, you were mentioning that people want to move into this community and want to have a business and want to do other things. And the trains and the sound and you know, that could limit people wanting to come here and just being a kind of a regional destination. So that might apply in a couple of areas.
Mm-hmm. And there is, I appreciate that, there is a placeholder too about implement economic development priorities, because we're still working with the Economic Development Advisory Board to have them identify which things they think that we should be working on, and when those are done, you know, then they'll fall, excuse me, into, you know, one of these other buckets potentially. But we do have support downtown, which is specifically called out, and then the North Kelsey region was identified as being part of that regional destination. Mm-hmm. So that was interesting to me when I was reading through it to better understand what that meant.
Thank you. Councilor Cook, anything further?
No.
Councilor Scarver?
Is there some place that we want to investigate the train station here, or is there any coordination, and Brad and I have this, with the Burlington Northerner about moving their bypassing training instead of doing it in Monroe, doing it way farther up the line where there's room, they don't disrupt traffic. In other words, we want to implement quiet trains, they do 4 miles around to get on through town. If they have to bypass each other going in opposite directions, it's a 10 mile an hour deal, and it takes a lot longer because one can't pass a 30 mile an hour the other. So, and my question is, why can't that be done farther up the line instead of here? Because there's lots of places where there's two sets of tracks farther up the line where they're not going to disrupt anybody's crossings down in this end of the world. And do we want to think about asking for a train station?
So let me go ahead and ask the group, councilors, let's go ahead and separate the question. What sort of interest is there to talk about a train station as one of these priorities? Councilmember Hanford?
Mm-hmm.
Anybody else interested in having investigating a train station up here?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Councilmember Davis?
Well, I've got some background on that. No, I don't have any.
You have some background?
It could be, yeah, I work with Red. Pretty extensively, so I know that, first of all, you're going to run into all kinds of problems with what you were just talking about with Burlington North. You got $12-15 million to drop on, they might listen to you. Other than that, putting in a rail station becomes a gathering point, kind of like a bus station. Yeah, I see that in towns all over the state, so I'm not real hot on that idea.
Okay.
I'm open to learning, so.
Yeah, Councilmember Gamble?
Yeah, I'm not cool. No, I don't know. That was pretty close. I'd be all in on a light rail station.
Yeah.
It takes me to downtown Seattle. That's actually more conducive to commuting, but yeah.
Okay. All right, so then let's come to the changing the switch, the parallel tracks. What sort of interest is there in us pursuing that? And to me, that's both of these are very much sort of lobbying efforts. I think there are things that we can talk to our lobbyists about. What sort of interest is there in doing a lobbying effort to see about moving that switch or whatever it's called?
We have background on that.
It's the same.
Burlington Northern will tell you they were here first. And you built your town around us. So if you don't like it, it's like buying a house next to the airport. So that kind of deal. So they're very entrenched. It's very hard to get them to change things. Money helps them to do that because that's the first thing they look at. Railroad is very expensive. And putting in rail and dual line and everything else is very expensive. And maintaining it is a constant ongoing expense. So they're very, they're not really willing to just change things around because Monroe is growing. They're like, that's your problem, not ours. That's generally what I see happen. So I'm I wouldn't be the least bit surprised if that's their attitude.
That was our answer.
Yeah, so.
Well, I wasn't implying that they should change the lane and rail or anything. I was just implying that there's rules.
Here's what they're going to tell you. Well, we can move it down to Sultan, but what are they going to say? Or we can move it up to Gold Bar, but what are they going to say? See, they can move it. They can move that. Because I think they've got dual link rails up there. They could do that. They could do some switching like that. But they're simply moving into somebody else's area. And then it doesn't change their problem. So if they don't have to do anything and they have the same problem, they're not going to take on the whole chain and all to just have more of the same problem. It's not that advantageous to them. So those are the kinds of things that you run into with them in this kind of a thing.
And as an argument, I would say, if you sell them a Gold Bar, there's nothing on the south side of the tracks that needs to get crossed as opposed to here.
So without getting into higher detail, because we've got a lot more here, on a course level, when we talk about where to expend resources, which is both financial and also staff time, how does this rank with the other things in the buckets here, both the train station and also the, what's the proper term, Councilmember Davis, the switch or the parallel tracks?
Yeah, it's the dual track for the...
Okay, so we have three councilmembers that were interested in continuing to talk about the train station. Again, when we're talking about where to expend resources over the next 6 years, how do you rank that with the other things that are up here, just on a real course level? And we can always bring it back to your more conversation.
Well, I would accept a reasonable answer from the train people. I mean, if the train people said that you have $12 million for the train station, first I'd say, the tracks are over here, why do we need $12 million? What do we need to build? But, I mean, there's a reasonable point where you said, that doesn't make sense. I'm okay with that. But I just thought it might be nice to ask. Is my opinion.
Just a quick, to answer your question, the only passenger rail, heavy rail, is Amtrak.
Right.
Amtrak doesn't belong to the NSA. They are their own entity. Mm-hmm. They rent or they lease rail time from BNSF. Mm-hmm. So it's a scheduled nightmare. Mm-hmm. They build stations on their own. Many of those stations are owned by BNSF if they already exist and they're leased. That's why a lot of them are pretty run down, because Amtrak doesn't put the money into it. BNSF doesn't put the money into it, blah, 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 blah. So it goes round and round. It gets into all kinds of contractual issues and who owns this and who's responsible for that and who's going to do this and who's going to take care of that. It becomes a major issue, and they go, why do we want to take that on? Unless you have a very compelling argument. You've got thousands of people out there waiting to get on the train, and Amtrak might say, yeah, we need to look at that. Yeah. But if it's not like that, they're not going to, they'll look at it.
So yeah. I do want to move on with the conversation. Just a show of, just a consensus. Is there a consensus to put the train station in one of the buckets? I understand Councilmember Scarborough said yes. Councilmember Kovac?
Depends on how much time has to be spent. I don't want to waste our time either.
Okay.
I understand.
Okay, so what we can do on a staff level, I suppose, we can always send a letter to BNSF and just express an interest in a train station.
We could do whatever you want to do.
Has there ever been any study of the train station before? Mm-hmm. Have we
considered a study?
We've
investigated what Leavenworth did, what Miami, Ohio did, and basically, they developed a local committee that raised money to pay to put the stop in, and then in that process petitioned Amtrak to start stopping trains there. And, in that process, Amtrak said, well, if you build a stop for us, we will stop trains there, as long as you pay for it.
I mean, the question I would have is, Everett's not that far, would they even consider stopping here?
Leavenworth is a destination, and Miami, Ohio is the last one I saw. It is the University of Miami is there, so there's
the possibility of lots of train passengers doing something in that location, so it would be worthwhile for them. So.
We could have the waiting park.
Yeah. Okay. So, again, coming back so we can move on. Councilor Starley, would you still like that go fund?
I wouldn't mind an answer to it. I don't want to spend a lot of time.
All right. Councilor Cutback
and Raise Gates here.
I agree.
Okay. Councilor. Okay, so I've got three council members. So we'll go ahead and we'll put on train station, explore train station, and explore the parallel, moving parallel tracks. Okay.
Go ahead. There you go. So we took that list that you saw on the previous slide and started to pencil in then where, again, from the mayor's perspective and the senior leadership team's perspective, what we would be working on and when. So that's why you see a pretty long list in 2018, and as we go a long time, of course, the list gets shorter and shorter. But again, that's why we just keep this rotating every year, is because things will start to move down the way. So what you begin to see then is kind of the progression of projects, right? Because it typically takes 3 to 5 years to get a project accomplished. So you see something, I'm trying to think of one that's on here that I can see right away, and I should have put one out. Oh, it should be 191st Street. Talking about the typo error. 191st Street grant, construct 191st Street. So you begin to see again that progression. We've got North Hill grant and North Hill Park construct. So I think if you go back, you'll see North Hill Park somewhere in here where it says require. So again, that progression that you see over time. And that's why things take a long time to accomplish, and that's why it's good to line then this strategic plan up with your 5-year forecast, because every year these things are going to have to be invested in. And these are the big picture perspective ideas, right? These are the things that are going to cost several hundreds of thousands of dollars, if not more. And we want to make sure that our 5-year forecast supports all of these items. So again, looking for, you know, what does council think about the progression of items that we have listed here? Is there anything that you would move later on in the list or move, you know, forward in the list?
So you know which one I want to move forward.
Councilman, do you have one?
2021, the
all-weather fields?
Yeah.
Okay. You want to move that into
as soon as possible?
Well, this is as soon as possible. So it doesn't happen any faster than this,
the
right?
The soonest it could possibly be with the grants we're applying for now would be the latter half of 2020, so effectively 2020.
Wait a second. So the grants that we already been awarded?
No, not that. The grants we're applying for, state grants.
Understood. So if we, right. What you're saying is using the existing funding sources that we've identified. Is that what you're saying?
Basically getting all the funding so we can construct the fields together. So
we have these 750 right now.
Yeah, that represents
about half.
Close to half.
Correct.
Well, that's design money.
I understand that.
And some construction money.
Correct. Design and construction. And right. What you're saying is that we're trying to secure the rest if you go to the grant route.
Yes.
This is, that's the statement of it. If you choose to go to grant route fully, you gotta wait to the earliest is 2021.
Yeah, and well, we would still match all the grant funding with local funds as well.
So we don't have enough local money to move this forward without affecting other projects. So
yeah, I totally get that. It's going to affect other projects.
Right,
my question
is that delay.
Yeah, and I don't feel like maybe I'm not asking it right. What's the total cost of the project?
So at this point, we estimate it to be about 2.2, but it could be a bit more. So now we're going to be bringing people this year on board to design it, and that's where the construction documents will be shared. So then we'll really have a solid line on what the actual cost will be.
Right. So you're 2.2, and you're planning on paying all 2.2 million of that with grants via this timeline.
No, probably about 3/4 to 80%.
About 80%.
The rest will be local.
And you haven't secured all 80% of it. That's where I'm
going. No. Yeah, right.
That's
yeah,
right.
Exactly. Yeah.
So that's what I'm saying is based off the funding sources that you've identified right now, that puts it in 2021.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. That's what I was looking for.
But to your point, and correct me if I'm wrong, that if you were to move it to 2020 or 2019, you'd be losing other projects to make that happen. And I'm just saying that because we're on the same page.
Right. You're either moving projects or you're choosing to finance it in a different way.
Right. Okay.
Right.
Okay, I just want to make sure that we're saying the same thing. Yes, we are.
Cool.
Oh, sorry.
And the finance director clears his throat, we all did.
Don't sneeze.
One maybe clarifying statement to make is that the money that the state has awarded us through the capital project, they have made very clear that they will not release that money until we have identified exactly where, not only where the funding is coming from, but we have secured the funding. So, and we actually spent time on the phone with the project manager at the state level, mm-hmm. and she again made that very clear that, you know, it's one thing to say we're going to apply for an RCO grant or we may have, you know, local funding for a portion of it. Until we actually have letters of commitment from all of that, they won't release that money either.
Correct. So. Yeah, that's why I'm more in line with what's find a different way to, because we don't have that. 2021 seems like almost like a pipe dream based off of the way we're going at it right now. What's the likelihood if it goes, because if we can't even secure funding, you know, for the construction side of it until 2019, 2020, how long does that grant?
Actually, that was one of the questions that we asked her, and while she cannot put anything in writing, prior practice, odds are better than not that it will continue to be reappropriated for us.
Odds are better than not.
They just can't say absolutely, but she has never seen one where, as long as we continue to show movement, she has never seen one get disappropriated.
Yeah. I guess that's the one thing I would like to see is that, you know, is our other options besides, you know, to use the existing grant money that we have now and maybe what are some of our other options or paying for it.
Right, so you could bond, or for example,
that's one of the ones that
have a bond?
Yes.
Yeah. So that was one of the reasons that it just jarred in my head. When we originally scheduled this, we were originally going to talk about the financing component, and after the financing component, we're going to talk about the scope of the projects. And you're right, there are different tools we can use, different mechanisms to come up with funding for any one of these projects.
Yeah. I guess, I mean, maybe I'm alone on an island on this, but I just, you know, we've talked about so many things in the 6 years I've been here. I mean, that part, you know, the playground stuff, which is awesome. But gosh, you know, having something that is really kind of a regional asset, you know, you joke about the Wakeport Park, but that was one of the things that was, you know, a thought process was having that kind of, and when you look at some of these areas that have city assets where they have the turf, you know, all year round you can use it and it's lit and.
Mm-hmm. If I can just jump in too, is that you know, in our park plan, in our 6 year CIP, that the next after the playgrounds, you know, this year, the next capital improvement, you know, project literally is the Alabama Field. So, and this year we're taking that significant step of doing the design work,
yeah,
you know, preparing construction documents.
It's probably also pressure because I had to listen to the rain outline today. Because all activities are canceled for kids today. So,
but now it's time to raise the question because if it is something that the council as a whole and the mayor are supportive of, the earliest you could move it to would be 2020, right? Because you're still talking about finishing up design in 2018, going out for your financing in 2019, and then going.
Well, that was the question though. I actually was more from as the reason why the design was in 2 years because we weren't sure that we were going to secure the funding, so the design would spread into 2019. Mm-hmm. Or if you secure funding, you come up with a financial.
So the design, the way our schedule is now is that we intend to have the design completed at the end of this year. So and then the idea would be that, you know, we may be able to in the spring, if we have good news with grants and get our local match up, is that, as Metzger mentioned about, you know, the latter half of 2019 when the RCO grants, when that can be released, if we're everything in place, we can move forward with construction.
One thing that struck me too, Mike, in thinking about it is that whether or not we could get a waiver of retroactivity on this project, and so if we did go out and finance it ourselves and then did get the RCO funding, that we could go back and reimburse ourselves for that. So I think that would be worth looking into.
Boom, I like that one. Beautiful.
But if we don't, then of course we're on the hook for it, but that's fine.
But that's right, yeah, I mean, as long as everybody's, you know, I just, it is something that could be tangible for the community as a, some, you know, we've had several things that have been, yeah, you know what I'm saying. All right, sorry, I'll get off that.
Other projects, other things you see on there. You've got the Kelsey Blueberry 191st, the Tourney, you've got 522. I'm just picking things here. Councilor Scarborough.
Well, you've picked some of the ones I'm going to say too. I think some of our priorities is Blueberry Lane, 191st, and maybe 191st and Blueberry Lane. And then I like the idea of turning place, but I don't know what heads we're butting against to get that piece of road from Elmerson's to achieve that. Yeah. But I think when we talk about some tangible things for the community, those two that people are looking for, I think. I think they ought to be pretty high on that. Get it done list, regardless of how we, you know, whether it's grants or, I mean, when it comes down to this money, we can get grants, and then we have to take our money. And I think, you know, I think they're high on the list to get it done. I don't think we're going to give any money to get the 522 funded for funding, I mean, unless it's our obvious problem.
Well, that's also, that when we talk about, and you still have the floor, but one of the things to acknowledge there is that it's not just funding for lobbyists and whatnot, but it's also retired resources. So we're talking my time, like tomorrow I'm going to be going down and meeting with Snoqualmie Valley Government Association to try to help build the support for 522. We're talking staff's time. So it's both money and time. But I just want to acknowledge that. You still have the floor, so I can do it.
Can you talk a little bit about the voter-approved park bond levy? Is that for the Northfield Park, or what would that be for?
Under 2020. Fourth and bond.
And I'm going to go to Northfield Park. I remember that being in park plan quite a while.
Right.
We were
recently talking about, well, the groups, the partners of the district and the county about coming up with projects for the bond and levy, and that could include North Hill Park, all the other fields.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we just went through a master planning process with, you know, Lake Tai and Cabin, so some of that may land into, but those were really the main projects that could come out of that we would identify.
Right, so we had a meeting with Jim Watts, with the East County Parks and Rec District, mm-hmm. representing the district, and then Tom Tygan representing Snohomish County, and myself. Mike was out sick that day. So we sat down and began to strategize around, you know, what does this bond look like? Mm-hmm. And then what we committed to was coming back again in April and talking about, you know, what are the capital projects that each of the groups wants to get? What would that look like for property owners? And then what exact timing we'd be looking at. But it is looking like 2020, November of 2020. Mm-hmm. So that's the reason why Mike mentioned that we're talking about the North Hill Park, in part because the district might be interested in leaving the acquiring that park, using part of their bond money, and then the city would develop it out and manage it.
Yeah, because that would be
It would be in city limits. Okay. Right.
Do we have a place where that's kind of located?
We're starting to look at properties.
Okay.
Yep. We have some willing property owners.
Yeah, the plan just generally hits the area north of Highway 2. We've been exploring potential options.
Right, and the strategy around that idea then is that the surrounding property owners would both favor the bond because they'd be getting something in their neighborhood.
That might be a way with that bond to get it what about, would you consider putting the Centennial Trail or portion, or asking the county to do a bond and us to throw that into our bond too?
We have been discussing a little bit partnering with the county on the Parks District. because the district boundaries or the numerous school district boundaries that we might be able to leverage from that bond, a portion of the project that's within the school district. I don't know how much that would be now that I'm thinking about it. Is it coincidental to the city's western?
It is. And that's the reason why we talked about it with the county.
Yeah.
Determined that we, other than putting a trailhead someplace for future connections, that there really isn't any nexus between the two. So the county said they'd rather put their money towards improving the fairgrounds, the buildings in the fairgrounds.
And so, I mean, one of the things, and this is just some context with the park type projects, is that all the funding, you know, in as far as history has been REIT, you know, which, and then also park mitigation fees, and then grants. Mm-hmm. So then the grants are in every year, other year cycle. So they're 2018, we're writing a couple for applying for a couple of grants in 2018, the next round is 20, the next one will be 2022, and that's really, to date, the only opportunities that Parks has had to fund large projects. So it is exciting to that we have this conversation now about the potential of bonding, you know, as far as moving the dial, you know, forward. So.
And then my other question was about the hotel study. Can you tell a little bit more about what that is?
That was something I think that the mayor had talked about last year, the year before that.
Yeah, so the issue here is that we have a lot of people that feel that our hotels are very, very full for probably about 4 months a year. And then also at Christmas time, there's a perception that we need more hotels here in town. And that we may need to do our own study to demonstrate that hotels are needed here. If you remember correctly, when the tourism promotion area person was in here speaking in Spain, I believe, I expressed an interest and a need for more hotels here, and she indicated that no, we don't need more hotels here, that they want to focus where I-5 is and 405, and I objected, but we didn't have a study to back that up. So that's one of the things we were talking about, whether or not we needed to do, is to demonstrate that there is a need for hotel expansion here.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense to me with the fairgrounds to maybe partner up with them on something like that, because when they're full year round and we don't have enough hotels here, if they're going towards I-5 and coming out here to use the fairgrounds.
Yeah, we've had some offline conversations with Tom Titan about potentially doing a overlay with the city and the county working together on that property that's within our UGA but currently outside our city limits around the fairgrounds, so we can kind of master plan that together. And I think we're more powerful if we operate with the county and they operate with us on trying to make changes to the way that front entrance particularly looks, and then the types of projects that will be happening on the fairgrounds property.
Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Starbuck.
And along those lines, where would we want to look as a double-edged sword? We want to enlist some homies to be part of our asking whoever says that the hotels are good enough over whatever next to five, mm-hmm. a reason to bring them this way? Or would that give Snohomish the nod for a hotel and not Monroe? Mm-hmm.
Things to talk about. I would argue that Monroe is different. We have access down 203, reaches I-90. We have access on 522 that accesses you know, the north end of Seattle, and also Highway 2. We then have access all the way up over the pass. Just based on that geography, I think we're positioned differently and maybe better to various markets. It's a matter of us doing storytelling to demonstrate that.
What would a hotel study look like?
We actually took one when I was in Stanwood, and so actually it's doing a market analysis, basically. So you have to look at, you know, where's the current supply, how is that supply currently being filled, what's the potential demand for a hotel, and you know, put together a report showing kind of all that demographics, and then you start shopping in around to various hotel chains.
Well, would you ask the hotels here how many people they turned away?
Absolutely. Yeah. That's part of the market analysis that you do. They don't like to give up that information, so you have to find it kind of in a roundabout way. But it is available.
I don't think it's necessary to. I don't know where we put them.
Just start trying to book every weekend right now. By the time that rolls around, we'll have it figured out.
Yeah, and we go ahead and highlight as part of this, remember the airport has a new zoning designation associated with it. It's regional destination.
Tourism?
Tourism.
Regional tourism. And so one of the options that the comprehensive plan provides where there is the ability for the airport, which is privately owned, if they want to become something different for a higher and better use, that they could do something like what comes to mind is like a variable lodge or something. If you can have both lodging, accommodation, and also some sort of a recreational component that would create some really nice synergy with the fairgrounds. So, you know, there, we have that option that the comp plan was designed to allow for as well. Anything else on this?
Thank you.
Okay, one of the things that I want to point out on the 522 funding strategy, I'd like to plant a seed. One of the things I'm concerned about there with 522 is that we have had a turnover in all of our representatives in Olympia. I am concerned about the loss of continuity with people who are representing us there. Also, the improvement that needs to occur is in the first legislative district. They don't represent us like the 39th does. And so one of the seeds that I wanted to plant was talking about different funding options, including or perhaps a regional transportation improvement district. So just wanted to plant that seed as one of the many things that we might talk about. I hate the idea of paying taxes, a sales tax, you know, a gas tax, and that that's going to the state, and that they're not improving the roadway that needs to be improved. But if we're going to, an argument might be made that for us to succeed economically, we might need to do on our own, and that is one tool that I think is provided for at the state level that we can do. So we may want to come back and talk about that as one of a variety of different funding structures that could be looked at. Anything else up here? Councilmember Scarborough?
On your funding for 522, you might like, I'm assuming that we're at every meeting that Everett says, I want the trestle replaced. We need to have people from here at those meetings to say, wait a minute, we've been waiting the next number of years for 522. We think it's more important than the trestle. Squeaky wheel disagrees. And if we're not there to squeak along with the guys that want the trestle, then somebody's only going to hear this, well, I guess we've got to have that trestle replaced, instead of saying, wait a minute, 522. It's their turn.
Right. And so to that, I would encourage council members to attend any meeting you can. Grant 522, whenever you're in those meetings, remind them that 522 needs to be completed. There are opportunities at different levels of government where there are town halls and things like that where you can go and share that sort of input. Also, to let you know, I've already reached out down south and will be going to the Snoqualmie Valley Government Association tomorrow night to start building those relationships down 203 to help gain a little bit more political momentum to get 522 finished. So you've got communities like Duval, areas north of Duval that suffer from a great deal of traffic that would benefit from 522 being completed. Also, earlier today, in fact, we had a meeting here where we were talking about the PSRC 25th Division. No, we were talking about, I wasn't in the meeting, but we had people here from the planning department at the county and a couple other cities talking about where we have similarities in our agenda, which includes transportation, and trying to make certain that our voice is heard better than it has been. But I would encourage everybody to go to Snohomish County tomorrow, Snohomish County Cities, SCIT, Economic Alliance. When you're meeting with people running for office, letting them know that this is important and it needs to be completed. It's going to take the mayor and the council members to do this in addition to the staff. Any other questions? Okay.
I want to point out too that we do have on here authorize to your budget and adopt to your budget. So hopefully council is good with that. Hopefully we can move forward to give us a little bit of flexibility in managing. So the question really
that we have, these are the big picture questions, are around the core values, mission, and vision. And, you know, the question is, does this plan, you know, implement the community's values, mission, and vision? And we talk a lot about what the values of the community are, and we actually went through a values exercise, and we're going to be taking our supervisors, our level supervisors, through that same exercise here in a couple of weeks, and didn't know whether or not the city council had any interest in going through something similar in July. It doesn't take all that long, but it does kind of tell you then, is your strategic plan actually aligned with your values? Because I think that that's really important, because you're not going to get to where you want to go unless that's happening. So just a quick check-in, as the mayor said before, about whether or not that first step that we've already done with our comprehensive plan kind of already achieves this goal, and there's no interest from the city council kind of going back and revisiting that at this point, that we're good and we're just going to move forward with the strategic plan.
Do you want to revisit that, everybody?
Well, what you suggested, it sounds like the staff are going to do a quick check-in and kind of go through a process about that.
Right. So we just want to ensure that all of us as the leadership team and the mayor, that our core values, you know, are in alignment, and have a conversation around those core values. And then dropping that down one layer, just to kind of check in with the second layer of supervision that we have here in Monroe. And so the question really is then, you know, is there any interest in doing a similar exercise from council, and just looking to see, you know, how do all of our core values align? We could then bring that back and, you know, realign then in January of next year, and, you know, go with this for the time being. So I guess that's the question is, you know, do you already feel like we've done that exercise and things are pretty good, or do you feel like, no, we really like a check-in on that before we move forward?
Well, I personally would like a check-in if it's, you know, at a council meeting or like this.
Be a retreat.
Right. Do an exercise around it, not taking weeks and weeks to check
out, exactly.
But one meeting where we kind of just check in with that, I think that's helpful.
Anybody else?
I'm ready.
Okay. It would educate me, so.
Okay. Anybody else? All right. We'll go ahead and we'll program
that. We'll schedule that then. And then that goes into how do we engage our strategic partners, right? Because another thing about your strategic plan is just, do you want to check in then with, again, line staff? And do you want to check in with your community partners and begin to say, this is the strategic plan that we are considering for the next 6 years? You know, is there anything, again, the same questions that we asked you this evening, is there anything on this list that you don't want to be working on, or something on this list that you don't see that you think we should be working on? So again, we can take it through the boards and commissions and just say, hey, this is the strategic plan, and ask these same exact questions, just to make sure, again, that you are and we are all focused together on the same thing, that there's alignment within the entire organization about what we should be working on.
So I would recommend yes to the Planning Commission, Parks Advisory Board, the Economic Development Advisory Board will help program some things into that. I know we were close to there, Sarah. What are your thoughts?
Mm-hmm. I agree.
We can also float it through the Downtown Monroe Association, the Chamber of Commerce, and a couple other partners, the school district. So there's no objection to that.
Okay.
Well, what I was just going to say is, asking our strategic partners where they feel they can also participate or help. You know, whether it's funding, whether it's, I mean, there could be a role in that in helping achieve some of this work, not just saying, hey, is this aligned, but is there a way that they could participate in making some of these things happen?
Yeah, it's a great question. How can they help? Right.
Right.
What is their role? And we're asking that question at the Economic Development Advisory Board. We have this list of projects, and obviously the city can't implement them all. I mean, somebody else has to take responsibility for the things that belong to them, so I think that's a good comment.
Let me go ahead and flip this out there. What do you think? Because you're right, our partners, I always think our partners here at the city, but we've also got partners at the state, county. What do you think about inviting them to engage or at least sharing it with them? Because, you know, finishing 522 is going to require help. Getting RCO grants or getting another earmark in a state budget or something for synthetic turf fields is going to require a journey.
I don't see that.
Okay.
know, I think Ms. Hazard.
We can engage them too.
Yeah, I think Ms. Hazard mentioned at the last meeting when she gave an update on the finance report that she shared the draft strategic plan with our bond council, and they were really enthusiastic about it because it looked, you know, of course, like the city is looking forward and planning right. forward and trying to make those alignments happen, and that, you know, resulted in having a better bond rating. Right? Yeah. That was a really good place for them to see, hey, yeah, they are thinking ahead about the things that they have to pay for and how they're going to pay for them.
And not trying to do it all in 1 year to overtax our resources, our limited resources.
Councilor Sarver, I'm sorry, Mr. Tagney.
I have another question. When we talk about engaging our partners, I don't have a feeling that the school district and the city are working as much together as I would think they could. Am I incorrect?
How so? More specific than?
Is the school district working with us? Are we working with them?
The answer is yes, but the question then would become what issue? Like, we are working closely with them on safety and security in the schools. We've got our SRO.
We have a person on the park board from...
From the school district.
Right.
I saw Deeka twice last week at different events. One was at the school district fundraiser, and also one was at the Monroe Coalition talking about safety in our schools. Councilmember Gamble was there at the at both of those events, and Councilmember Back was at one of those events. So we at least, from an elected official to elected official and CEO, we have strong connections there. We also have staff-to-staff communication that occurs.
Okay.
Okay.
Oh, and I would just go on top of that too, Kirk, that it's also, I mean, because they're, you know, they have a strategic arm, they have a school board elected, you know, represented just like us, and I think some of it is making sure that we're, you know, engaged on that front. That would be my thought on that as well. I mean, do you know your school board representatives, you know, and are we interacting with them? Are we asking, are we challenging each other to, you know, in regards to a different thing where we may see alignment, strategic partnership possibilities so that they can bring it up in their strategic discussions, just like we're bringing up here on the SRO piece. You know, when we were there in the meeting last week, was talking with Jason Hutchinson and some of the other school board members saying, hey, you know, what are we doing? And then the other component is obviously the county. We've got a couple of those schools that are, you know, that are in the county, so there's another, you know, partner there as well. But we own the pieces of it too, I guess, is what I would say. So, and there's opportunities for us to engage there as well.
Yeah, I agree with Councilmember Gamble. It goes with you asked also about the trestle. The 8522 needs to be finished. A lot of this comes down to our elected leadership also going and making contact with other elected leadership and having those conversations. One other thing that we're doing next year that I talked to the Monroe Chamber Board about 2.5 weeks ago is, and this came from Ms. Knight, having a Monroe Day where we go down to Olympia during the legislative session to talk about Monroe issues. And so coordinating with the school district and the DMA and the chamber and take the next step and the city and coming up in other entities and talking about Monroe specific things that we need in creating what I call the Monroe mob to just go down and talk to different representatives about what our needs are. You know, we go down there with the AWC legislative days, but and that's valuable, but it also gets washed out by all the other cities. When we can go down there as one unit, as Monroe, we'll be stronger. And again, that comes down to us as elected officials being active and knowing one another and things like that. So, that answers your question?
Thank you.
Anything else on that?
Thank you.
Yeah. All right.
So the next two items are linked together, which is, are we organized to accomplish our vision? And this really came out of, again, the conversations around what are we doing to support our parks, right? We have all those capital improvements planned, and we're talking about in the previous slide, the bond and levy measure, right? And this is in part to ensure that we have the right people in the right place in order to do all of this park work that we're talking about doing.
So do we have those right people and the right resources? And this goes back, I think, to Councilmember Gamble's comment around if we wanted to move something forward, you know, from 2021 to 2019 or 2020, what resources do we need to have available? And again, that's why we're trying to align this plan with the five-year forecast, because we're going to be talking just about these things, which is, you know, are we organized to get there, and do we have the right financing? Policies and development regulations, something that just recently came up in our Economic Development Advisory Board, two of the things that are kind of rising to the top are adding more restaurants into downtown. So the hospital district is having difficulties attracting doctors and other high-level staff to come into Monroe because they feel like we don't have the right mix of restaurants and bars and breweries, that kind of quality of life issue. And so the other thing that's rising to the top of the list is, well, what are we doing in our development regulations then to encourage that level of development to happen in our downtown? Well, one of our board members is trying to actually open up a restaurant in downtown, and she just found out that she's going to have to pay $27,000 in traffic impact fees, which is prohibitively expensive in order to accomplish that vision of having more restaurants in downtown. And so this gets back to then, you know, what are we doing for our policies and our development regulations? Those are not easy questions to answer. I had a conversation with Mr. Feilberg, and their authority, which is why they're not easy to solve. But I think if we're going to try and accomplish some of those long-range goals, making sure that these development regulations and our policies and the people are all in the right place. And so that comes really then down to the operations piece of it, right? That falls down then into what do those annual work plans begin to look like? Mm-hmm. So not part of today's conversation necessarily, but we will come back and talk more about this as part of the mayor's recommended budget, because that's going to be then the job of, you know, the mayor, myself, and this Hazard in order to kind of bring everybody's work plans into alignment with this. So if there's something specific that you all are hearing, you know, out on the street as far as, you know, the story that I just told, that would be good and helpful to better understand.
So on that, have you been hearing anything that we should add? We haven't really talked about having the right people, policies, financing, or development regulations. The transportation impact fees would be one specific example in downtown.
And I would add park staffing. We've got to solve that park staffing problem. I mean, right now, we've got Mr. Farrell working, and he's got one in-house staff member, and the rest of his staff is all out in the field. So we can't accomplish a lot of these long-range goals just because we don't have the people there in order to make those things happen. Park planning.
I guess we're asking the question, you know, hey, have you heard, right?
Yes.
But have we reviewed and say, can we proactively identify different stuff that we have in place right now based on the fact that, hey, we need more hotels or we want more restaurants downtown based on what we have available on where we can proactively identify, hey, you know what? Someone, if they're looking into putting something here, this is what it's going to cost them. We should look at this policy.
Yeah.
Instead of waiting for somebody to say, what the, you know, we actually self-identify.
Yeah. That's a good question. Do we have like an audit in different areas of town that things that might be keeping us from
just trying to realize? Because it's a great point. And ever since I've been on council, any time we have one of these brought to us, whether it was downtown with the grease trap or, you know, we always will go and take a look. And if it doesn't make a lot of sense, you know, and we're not losing, you know, a ton of money or setting precedents, this, that, or the other. We're always trying to make it so it's conducive if it's a betterment for the city. So why maybe we should look, because that only identifies that they raise their hand, right? But if you're someone that's just like, oh my God, I can't do that. That's just too much. And then you go down the road and then you open it up down in Snohomish because, you know, it's the least path of resistance. Just a thought.
So what we usually do on staff is that if we hear about something, we go ahead and try to address it.
Sure.
If we find out that it's a policy thing that's significant, we'll bring it to council's attention and talk about, do you want to change the policy? An example of that would be the downtown transportation impact fees. Remember a couple of years, about a year and a half ago. Yeah.
So we're saying the same thing.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, you know, how do we flip that paradigm where we're, instead of us waiting to hear from somebody, that we're proactively taking a look and saying, hey, we've got something in place that
could be an impact.
Yeah, I think part of that is asking the right questions when the new regulations come across. So when we look at the transportation impact fees, what do these fees mean as a poor example of these sorts of developments, like in the downtown? Thinking that, you know, the downtown's really sensitive. We want to make certain that we understand what the impact of this fee ordinance is on the downtown for these development regulations. You know, the industrial park or whatever, it's just keeping in mind when those policies come before us that even though the Planning Commission reviewed them, just because they say it's a green light doesn't mean that you as council members, me as a mayor, having to implement regulations, that we as a unit have to look at them to say, okay, it passed muster with the Planning Commission, but what are the things that they're not thinking about that we need to be thinking about to make certain that, you know, that things are going to work. Do you have other thoughts?
I do. Another way, I was going to say that Mr. Swanson and the Planning Commission are currently working on updating the Unified Development Regulations, which is a proactive look, and I think that they've identified some areas where they feel like we're not in alignment currently, and we could do a better job at that. So I know that's one of the things. We just had a conversation today with Mr. James Palmer, our economic development specialist, talking with the realtor at the former Providence building, right, and talking about some of the things that we're trying to do in order to encourage development in that location. So again, kind of being proactive on the list of saying, here's what the cost of that building is, here's what the cost of the renovations are, you know, we're trying to fill that building, and yet some of our regulations are prohibiting, you know, kind of bringing together a group of people potentially to buy it. So what can we do to assist on that? And that's really being proactive. So I don't know, do you have anything else to add?
Yeah. One thing, especially with, well, I guess any sort of rewrite, when you're doing something, you know, you can test it in the lab all day long, but then eventually you got to put it out on the street. Well, what I typically like to do is schedule like 0.1 year out and say, okay, we're going to test this thing out for a year and then we're going to do a look back. And, you know, as you go through, you start collecting your problems, so you're not doing these onesie, twosie code amendments, you kind of build them up for that year. And, well, we have great intentions here, however, this really isn't working out the way we want to. And then you go back and you essentially do a year later an amendment of everything that thought was a good idea isn't working or this needs to be improved on. And so that's one thing we try to self-regulate or you know, critique our work that we put out there on that.
Ms. Hester has something to add?
It's just an observation from a prior life, but I would almost posit that what Ms. Knight's trying to do here with laying out the strategic plan, doing that look back on the core values, is to get to those types of things. If it is a core policy value, it's like a 1,000-foot level for the council to say, no, we want to try and concentrate and attract restaurants into our downtown core, then you shift your priorities accordingly, and then you ask us to develop the policies to bring to you to make that happen. Be it whether we create a zone that has discounted impact fees within that area, whatever it may look like, that's really what she's trying to get to a certain point here, so that we can start focusing on those things, or if we're hearing about those things, bring it to your attention, and have that yearly review. Does that still fit into what your core values should be, or what you want them to be anymore?
I like what she says. She makes me sound brilliant.
Anything further, Councilor Gable?
No, good.
Councilor Scarborough, you have your stuff?
Well, this may be the wrong time. When we're talking about businesses coming to town, so you tell me you want to talk offline on this space. I talked to the guy at Quiznos in Duval, and I said, why don't we consider opening a second floor up here? He said, the equipment's already in the room. He says, because the guy there wants to rent the whole mall, he doesn't want to just rent. Do we have any pressure on people like that? No?
We might, yeah. We could talk after this, because I would probably have James Palmer reach out and talk to the Quiznos franchisee and then check in with the building owner.
Seems to me we had the same problem that was when the freight place came in and they went half the building dollars and said, no, you got to rent it all, rent the other half yourself. Mm-hmm. We're not doing ourselves any good by having that Allison's business or building empty. I mean, we've got this homeless camping in our doorway. I'm not sure we're doing ourselves any good. We're not having any pressure on people to make a reasonable request to accommodate a reasonable request instead of thumbing their nose and bringing business into town. But it is their business. Somewhere in the city. The city can make you landscape your business if you want to put it in. What pressure does the city have on Albertson's parking for Albertson's shopping center to say, hey, what are you doing to fill that building instead of making it vacant?
Yeah, one of the most challenging conversations to have is with the building owner. They have different motivations for doing different things.
Any further questions, sir? Does anybody else have anything on this bullet before we move on to the next one? Let's go to the next one.
And we already talked, I think, about, you know, do we have enough resources? So we'll be coming back to you with a five-year forecast and identifying any issues where we're potentially underfunded and need to talk about raising revenues. And there were a couple of items on the previous slide that talked about those bullet points. Any roadblocks or risks that you think we need to be paying attention to for accomplishing our goals or strategic plan?
Roadblocks, risks? I think one of the things would be back to the resources, whether it's financial or it's staff, and just even when we have that financial resources, like out of public works being able to get projects, and we still have issues with having adequate staff. I know that just like Ms. Knight pointed out, Mr. Farrell could really use a like a park planner that could help out with the park advisory board, help them be a little bit more program oriented, where they're, you know, more proactive on reviewing things. Our city has been very focused on its recreation component, where the adventure starts here. That means that his department is very important for tourism and acting as a destination. And we put a lot on those shoulders over there to carry out that mission. So anyway, if any roadblocks come to you, any risks, please let us know, and we keep those in mind as we're going through these.
Yeah, you think about the classic strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats, right? So this is the threat piece. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. You know, it's basically what it is. SWOT analysis, right? So we need to be thinking about this. We would have known, you know, back Colombo in the first district was going to be a barrier to 522. I mean, that's important to understand, right? Those political barriers.
Right, and I want to clarify for the microphones that he was not on when he was not in the legislature when that happened.
Oh, I wasn't suggesting that. Just trying to get the project. Thank you for that.
We want to get a solution to that. Thank you for your support.
So this is the final slide. It's just a recap of what we've talked about today, right? Again, so we've got this part, the strategic planning piece done, and then the link to financial resources is coming to you in July, and that's what we're going to try and bring everything back into an alignment. And then based upon what we heard from council this evening, we'll do a quick values review, so we'll just check in and make sure, and then we'll bring back together everybody's values and you can have a look at those as well. We'll figure out where we're in alignment on values and then how those values then influence then what we should be working on over the next 6 years, because I think that's important. And then obviously this annual review and adjustment, so we'll just start this off on the process, and you'll be seeing this regularly as part of the mayor's recommended budget. So any questions? I think that's absolutely the last line we've got. We'll turn it over to Ben, unless Mayor, you want to give everybody a quick break before we went into the next one.
Well, I think a quick break, but Councilmember.
Just one more kind of comment on the where we are, or where are we now, and where do we want to be. In between there, because how we'll get there is kind of our action plan, but between where are we now, where do we want to get, or where do we want to be, kind of have to do a gap analysis of what's the gap, like what is missing. And right. That then details in kind of how we'll get there.
Right, so I'm hoping that that goes back to this, right, that we identified, you know, these are the things we said are our goals, and this is how we're going to accomplish those goals. So these presumably identified the gaps. But if they're thinking different, now would be a good time to have that conversation.
Yeah, I mean, maybe we can.
Do you want to go back one more, too? And
well, just look at this those, one? When you go back to that other slide,
this one?
Those are things we've identified that we're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't necessarily say what the gap is. Mm-hmm. So, it.
Well, I guess I hear what she's saying. When you if you read the vertical, it's implied. So housing, update development regulation, affordable housing strategic plan. The gap is we don't have enough affordable housing, right? So maybe it's just calling it out in the slide before that you're looking for, right, Councilmember Kovac? Yes.
Yeah, because when I look at this, I'm trying to go, just, where are we now, you know?
Right, that's supposed to be defined, where are we now, is defined in the comprehensive. I don't know if that adequately describes where are we now, as well as the gaps.
Right. What do you think about it?
I think that's one of the reasons why we're having this conversation right now, is what are the gaps that we're missing? Staff and leadership have sat down for a couple meetings, went over this. We've received feedback this evening about some things to add. If we go to the 6-year strategic plan, we're going to be using that to try to figure out how to allocate resources in 2019 and then project that into the forecast for the, you know, for that 5-year term. And, you know, we may have to have some conversations about how to fund what's on there and about prioritizing, including shipping things out or keeping them where they are or shipping them in. But, that's why we're having the conversation is what should be on this list that isn't. That's why we want to engage our stakeholders, find out what's missing, and then also promote what we're doing so that they can see that there's a long-term plan. We don't want to be just walking up asking for $1 million or $800,000 in Olympia without a plan.
So if you go back to the affordable housing, so when do we get more detail on affordable housing plans? So where are we now? That would say, like, here's where we're at now. We have this much units of affordable housing, 0, 10, 20, whatever we have. And then where do we want to be? We want to have X number. And then that's the gap. You define the gap, and then you go, okay, how are we going to close that gap? And that's when, so that's what I meant of kind of drilling down a little bit more, what is the gap? Affordable housing strategic plan, you know, yes, we need more affordable housing. To be honest, what community doesn't? That's the sense I get, is most communities need more affordable housing. But truly, what is our gap? Like, what is that gap? Because we don't have any, like, what are we shooting for? We want more affordable housing, but what does that mean?
We have 50, we need 200.
Yeah, I mean, just so you're defining the gap a little bit more so you have something that, a number to shoot for so that you know when you're hit success.
Mm-hmm. So. And one of the ways we could approach this is we could certainly have this in the bar chart. So this 6-year strategic plan go through each of the committees, and maybe the committees could look at it from their subject areas on what may be missing or how we might want to make adjustments to this. What do you all think? 15-minute to half-hour conversation each one of the committees with a focus on those subject areas.
I'm going to do that after it goes through the boards and commissions, so you've got some feedback coming back, and these are the things that boards and commissions identify. Do you want to add them into the list? And then that would give you something specific to consider.
We could even just take through the boards and committees, bring it here, and then see if you want to take it through committees also. So that's another option.
And I know on Mr. Swanson's work plan, there is an affordable housing component on there. And I can't remember what's the focus of that initiative?
So the affordable housing is just a deeper dive into the affordable housing chapter. What is going on through under this UDR update? We're discovering there's some things that we just can't tackle on the timeline. They deserve more attention. Sign code to one of them, affordable housing is another one. I know about affordable housing, I'm by no means an expert, and I need time to research it and review it in order to come up with a good policy. During this review, we can do some additional things, bonus height, floor heights, things like that, to offer more incentives for it. But to truly dive into it and come up with something that, truly say we've done all we can for affordable housing in the zoning code, I need more time.
Mm-hmm.
That's great.
All right, anything else on any of the other questions? Well, thank you. It's very helpful to have your input at this point. And Professor Martin, so thank you very much for coming to the budget as we move forward. Community input.
Awesome, thank you.
Mr. Swanson?
Thank you, Mr. Lumber.
Oh, yeah, let's take a break. Everybody okay with a little break until 7 o'clock and that clock? We're recessed until about 7 p.m.
Thank you.
I came home.
Again? I know that it is flat.
Can you be the one to record? Okay, time right now is 7:01 p.m. We are out of recess. And Mr. Swanson is back.
Thank you. So, if you remember the email a few weeks back, maybe 3 weeks back, I sent out a description of the Vision 2050 that the Houston Regional Council is currently going through. And what it is, they're in their very beginning stages, and back up a little bit. So, Houston Regional Council is essentially a regional transportation and planning authority that governs Snohomish, Pierce, King, and Kitsap County. And their whole original purpose was is actually a transportation district, and that's where all our federal funding dollars flow through is PSRC. And so when Public Works goes to apply for a grant, more times than not, they're applying to Puget Sound Regional Council to receive those funds. And so that's our big hook of why we're involved in the Puget Sound Regional Council. So along with this, they developed a transportation plan and then this vision plan, which is essentially their version of a regional comprehensive plan. And so they developed Vision 2020 and then Vision 2040, and now they're working on Vision 2050. And essentially, just like with our comprehensive plan, where it takes us out to 2035, their regional comprehensive plan takes us out to 2050. And so they're at the very beginning stages of this process, where we just went through and we submitted comments to them and attended one of their meetings. It's called the scoping process. And just like with any documentation that we do or anybody else in the state does at a higher level, it requires an environmental analysis or review. And in this case, it was called a scoping review. And so it's just the initial review to reach out to all the communities in that area and say, what should we be focusing on? What should we be looking at? Are we missing anything? So everybody sends their comments. Last I heard, they have over 3,000 comments that they have to compile together. And they take a look at that and say, is this within or beyond our original scope? And then they move forward with their environmental review. Ultimately, at the end of this, is they're going to come out with these new population projections, and they have a handout in there that essentially shows you the estimated increase in population by 2050, which is approximately 1.8 million, and then 1.2 million new jobs. And so they work in conjunction with the counties as far as where that new population is going to go. And so what we have in our current comp plan after Vision 2035, when we have a population target of approximately 25,000, that trickles down or comes from both Puget Sound Regional Council and Snohomish County as far as the population allocation. So PSRC is going through their major update. We're going through our code amendments right now with the comp plan. Snohomish County is also gearing up for their updates. So we're kind of at this next one, we're at this very beginning point of when we're going to start seeing a lot of change and a lot of studies and a lot of effort pushed into what do all of these communities want to look like in the years ahead. So this, along with our economic development efforts, specifically around the North Kelsey area, and a little bit with Planning Commission, and we're going to talk about it down the road, we started looking at densities and how do we achieve those densities, and do we want to change some areas that were traditionally just business into a form of mixed use by allowing multifamily residential down there. now allowing multifamily residential, I've approached a lot of affordable housing developers and just market rate developers for affordable housing. With the multifamily, it gets a little different. If you're in the affordable housing game, you can essentially go through the state and get bonds, so that helps offset your costs. That you can get some 35 feet in height kind of units. The market rate housing people, they need approximately about 65 feet for multifamily housing. Our current height limit caps everything at 45 feet, and the highest is actually in this Norman Kelsey area over here. And so one of the things that we brought up and have started looking at is, do we need to increase these densities? Under the current comp plan, it talks about in the general commercial zone, allowing mixed use, actually bringing in a residential element into our commercial area. And kind of at a staff level and with the consultants that we're looking at, is one thing in the North Kelsey area we notice is that there's not a lot of life down there. There's business, but you don't have the people on the street. And start talking to some of the surrounding business owners of, you know, what would you think if we put multifamily down here? And we talked with the owner of Kelsey Place and discussed that a little bit with him, and he loved the idea. He wants people down there, and he really likes it. And so that kind of started pushing us to the bigger question of a higher density, if we allow taller developments, and with these vision updates of what Snohomish County is doing right now, it brought up the question, what's Monroe want to look like in 2050? Because along with all this economic development, you know, we always hear, you know, we want Trader Joe's, we want PCC, we want all these different places. And we have to hit certain thresholds in order to attract those places. And so that is kind of the broad question that I put out to council is, do we want to be one of those regional centers when it comes to 2050? Do we want to be kind of the heart of this area? Do we want to be holding all that business? Do we want to be the bigger city in the area? Or do we want to stay at, and Deborah did some of the numbers, is with our current growth rate, we're at approximately 3% average. Do we want to bump that up? And do we, in 2050, do we want to hit like a 50,000 mark, which would be a 3.5% growth rate is what we need to look at in order to hit that by 2050. And so that's really kind of the big question I have the council, because you tell me now as far as what you want to go to, then I can start championing those efforts with Puget Sound Regional Council and Snohomish County. Now's the time for us to be vocal if we want more population. And that could, moving urban growth areas, we actually had a meeting about this today, is a little more difficult. So there's a potential that it could involve expansion of urban growth areas. There's this, you see this map right here, and a lot of people have forgotten about this. There's that in the southwest corner down there is that brownish color. And so what that was is years ago, City of Monroe had that on their map as urban growth area. And they went to Snohomish County and said, hey, we want to look at expanding into our urban growth area. Snohomish County said, we don't have that on any of our maps. And so fights went back and forth between the city, and what ultimately settled on was the county said, okay, you go through, you manage all your urban growth area, and this is 2006, go through and manage all your urban growth area, come back to us, and we can talk about, with the time you call it the Southwest Study Area. And we can talk about the Southwest Study Area to potentially grow. At that time, it was, and somebody just reminded me of today, they were looking at some light industrial down there. That was before the taxes changed, or to the destination-based taxes. So nobody's really brought it up since. So if urban growth area expansion, we're looking at something like that, that may be a good potential, because if we go further north, you're just essentially pushing people out further and further, and pushing down a chain link. This way you're kind of getting that focus around 5.2, where the majority of our population spills out and gets to work every day. So these are the big questions that I have. As far as how aggressive should we push, and what do we want to look at?
Yeah, I was just going to add that question really then revolves around the height that Mr. Swanson mentioned at the beginning, which is right now 35 feet is how many stories?
Three. Yeah.
And in some areas we can go up to 45, which is four. And in order to make multifamily
outside of affordable multifamily, but market rate affordable, that would be then going up to?
Six is kind of the standard answer that I've been getting back.
Six-story. So we're looking potentially then at six-story multifamily development, and as Mr. Scorza mentioned, you know, we've been talking then with Bob Stowe and our brokers about, you know, what is the new vision for North Kelsey, and we'll be bringing that back to you at your April 10th meeting. But it would be looking then at adding that multifamily in the North Kelsey area, but then also to the south of North Kelsey, on the south side of US too. So in kind of the center of the community, you want to, in the brownish area, that, yeah, that all over there. And then the parts in the yellow on the east side of 522 that haven't yet redeveloped. Because that's what it's going to take in order to get up to a population of 50,000 people within our current UGA, with the understanding that it's very unlikely that the county is going to allow us to change that UGA in order to accommodate people. And so the purpose for the conversation is really, as Mr. Swanson said, they're starting those conversations now, and we don't want to be out in front of council in those conversations, and yet we need to be indicating, I think, to both the county and to the Puget Sound Regional Council the direction that we want to go.
Okay, and I'm happy to already see tents up. I'm going to go ahead and share here. This is, I know we're talking about a vision of 2050, and I'm happy that I already see their name tags up. The way that I think about it is like this, that a lot of times you have people come before you that are complaining about the new subdivision going in right next door to them, when the yellow machines go out there and start moving the ground and everything. But they weren't there to comment on the subdivision. They weren't there to comment on the zoning regulations, you know, for the rezone. They weren't there to comment on a comprehensive plan. And we're kind of there. This is like the regional version of the comprehensive plan. Even though this is 2050 and I'll be 80 when you hit 2050, mm-hmm. when the scoping that we turned in comments for on this just over a week ago was critical, because this document, when it comes out, will then influence a whole series of decisions at every level, and then trickle to the city level on how our city is going to grow. That, in turn, is going to impact 522, Highway 2, 203. It's going to impact where all sorts of investments for parks dollars and so on will go in the future. So I just want to impress on everybody that even though this is a very long-term plan that PSRC is doing in Seattle, this is extremely important that we get our voice out there, that people understand that cities like ours that are surrounded by agricultural resource lands, that we are cities and understand what it is that we want. So anyway, that's my motivation that I don't think I need to say that I said anyway, because we've already got name tags up. Councilmember Cutback.
So I can understand why businesses in that area would want, you know, multifamily, I mean, draw people, mm-hmm. especially if that area is walkable and on the bus line and close to 522, and it makes sense. One question I have about that is, can traffic handle, you know, can the roads around there handle, if you're doing a multifamily residential apartment complex, mm-hmm. which would serve how many people, I don't know what the average would be, do we have the infrastructure road-wise around that area to handle that big influx of people?
So that's a really good question, because that's one thing we brought up earlier. When they went through, and what they did is called programmatic EIS for the site. And so they front-loaded all the environmental work, so when somebody wanted to come in and buy it, they just had to buy it and all the environmental work was done. They only analyzed it for commercial.
Right.
So with moving forward, it would take that additional traffic analysis. Because, okay. you know, the PM peak hour trips are different for residential than a retail.
Completely
than
a retail.
And we would have to
analyze
it for that. And we go into this, you know, also understanding, you know, we still have issues on 522. We still have, you know, trestle issues. You know, again, big picture, kind of long-term, what we're going to look at now for preparing for long-term in the future.
Yeah. And that would be my only concern with saying, yeah, go move forward and increase the density there and allow multifamily residential when I don't even know if it can be supported there, but I think it's worth a look, because I do think it would, I think that would attract more businesses if there's still areas that need to be filled out there. Businesses would, they have a market right there, so why wouldn't they want to then locate their store near there? So I think that's worth a look. My only concern would be, can infrastructure of the roads support that? You know, when Walmart came into town, we heard from tons of people about the traffic that it would bring. And I heard from some community members, they thought actually Walmart didn't bring as much traffic as I thought it would. But the multifamily housing unit would. So, thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Scarborough.
First of that, you're talking about putting multiple family housing in North Kelsey. Okay. The other, you said it'd take a 3.5% increase to be at 50,000 in 2015?
From 3 to 3.5.
And are we at 3% now?
That's the current growth rate. Correct. Average.
So what we want to, is what we want to do to try and get to a $50,000 person mark by 2015?
That's the question to you, and so when you're thinking 50,000, think Bothell, think Burien, Lacey. Those areas are roughly around that size, and so that's essentially right around that size that you would look at for the last one.
Right, and keep in mind everybody else around us keeps growing too, right at the same 3% rate. So.
But when you compare us to Burien or Lacey, is it the same geographic area?
Pardon? No, just size.
We'd be smaller.
Right, yeah, but population.
That right, but I think it doesn't matter to know that if, are we like Vauxhall, are they a bigger geographic area, land mass, so they're not as dense?
Right, right.
Because Monroe is a smaller landed, so we would be denser.
We would be denser, and then just depending on, because you're talking quite a few comp plan cycles up to that year.
Yeah.
So during that time, I'm willing to bet that there would probably be some UGA expansion with the people coming in, those people need someplace to go.
Okay.
And so you'll probably see the city at some point between now and, push out and expand and accommodate that.
Yeah, we'd be smaller and taller instead of.
Right, that's what the Growth Management Act predict, right? Everybody's going to be smaller and taller.
Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts?
Well, in my age bracket, don't like it. Okay? And there, you're going to have to do your demographics around Monroe to find out how many people in over 70 mark don't like being huge and busy. Okay? A lot of them don't understand. I do understand, and I still may not like it, that you need growth so you have jobs, so you have all that and everything can get better. And taxes create more revenue. But you have to look, in my opinion, at the people in this category who don't have children, who are on a fixed income, who are watching their fixed income being eaten into every year with higher taxes for amenities that they don't see. So I don't know how many of those people you have around, you know, and maybe there's a lot of young people that go, I can afford it. I don't know. I'm talking to you from somebody who's on a fixed income who keeps seeing it being eaten away and eaten away. I'm not destitute, you know.
Right.
Something tells me, am I going to have to move out of here before taxes eat me up? That is one perspective of, I don't want growth, or I do like growth. So.
Okay. Sounds good. Yeah. Councilor Hanford?
Thank you. So to answer your questions, I like the idea of expanding more at the foot of 522 there, and the old Monroe Sonoma Strip, closer to the highway, to both highways in reality, than up on the hill some more. Not sure about the six stories there. Are we able to say we'll allow six stories in just the North Kelsey area? Okay, so we can be selective. So I don't think I'd be willing to look at six stories out where I just mentioned, at 522 there, but I like the idea of growing in that area.
What about in the multifamily zone down there? Or would you still like to focus it towards the North Kelsey?
No, I'm sorry. So to clarify, back down right there,
yeah.
I love the idea of expanding multifamily housing, our city limits, everything down there. I'd love to see us expand that. As far as the multi-housing in the North Kelsey area and the other area where you were just pointing, I love that area. I've been parking down, been working at Plumbing and Rental now for over a year. I park really near, right near the Target, which walks, and I walk past these probably 8 or 10 story apartment complexes across the street from Boeing. And, you know, it's the Renton Village or whatever they call that area. And there's all sorts of retail, medical centers. And all these apartments have their garages built in underneath them. And so there's no retail on the street level. It's literally, you know, just the sidewalks. But right across the street are all these restaurants that and shopping and everything else. And so I like that idea, and I could totally picture that in North Kelsey if the traffic can stand it. I think I could totally see a bus, you know, once that's done, a bus line getting going through there and looping up back onto the highways. And it's central to all three highways, so that's really a great location. I would love to see the six-story, I'd be open to the six-story option there for sure, because I don't think you would really be blocking, you're not blocking necessarily the mountain views, you know, for the most part. Obviously, you're not going to do that around.
You brought up a really good point that I didn't make clear, is that chances are that first story will be parking. And so when we're talking about six stories, you're probably talking about five of living space in that first story parking. So thank you for that.
And I don't know, I mean, we own the land too, so there's all sorts of options there. If this is something that we pursue, that we may be able to move along faster than just waiting for a developer to buy some property that we own. If we own it, you know, we can move on this faster than we. So I like that approach. I really like the idea of you asked, do we want to stay small? Do we want to go big? What do we want to do? I like the idea of let's attract everyone and say, come here. Because if you look at all the other cities around, they all have affordable housing problems. Mm-hmm. Every single one of them. When the housing market was crazy in Seattle years ago, Monroe started building up, right? All these houses, everybody comes to Monroe, they commute to 522 to Seattle. Mm-hmm. And Monroe's filling up, right? I mean, all these projects going on, but if you look at within our city limits, how many more lots can we do? Okay, we're going to build 200 homes on. That's a question. Can you answer that?
Yeah, so we have...
In city limits.
In city limits, we probably have 3, off the top of my head, just single family, I would say 300 to 400.
Single-family detached.
Yeah, single-family detached up in this area. We have some other minor, but you're right. I mean, Lance, I mean, where is the opportunity, and probably by 2050 we'll have an expansion of the urban growth area. However, we have to look at the finance side of land also, you know, as far as building up and building within our footprints and looking for that essentially redevelopment of those areas.
I mean, so let's say that a builder comes in next month and they say, I want to build this many homes within the city limits. How many actual pieces of property are available where they can say, okay, I'll buy that one?
There's probably five or six big chunks left.
Right.
Kind of that big green field with one house on it.
Yeah. And that's my point, is that it's going to be gone here before you know it. Mm-hmm. Way before we expand and annex all these other places that we've been talking about for years, that just haven't happened. So I say we if people are looking to build and looking to buy, and they are, then why not stay here? You know, that's adventure starts here, destination city, it makes sense. The three highway, you know, coming together there. So I can appreciate people that would want to stay small, and I've heard that before. Well, it's not the smaller town it was anymore. But you know what? When you're this close to the big metropolis cities of Seattle and Everett, you're never going to be the small town anymore. Even if we as council say no, we want to remain small, it's still going to grow. We can't stop the growth. I mean, it's just going to happen. So let's welcome it.
Perfect. Yeah, I had a council member a long time ago. He said it took me a long time to understand I could never stop growth. I could only manage it. And so I thought that was a pretty profound thing.
So I hope I've answered your question.
You did.
From my perspective.
Yeah. So I just want to touch base on one thing. You were talking about higher buildings in North Kelsey and the Southwest and in the Blueberry and Rama Hospital, right?
Yeah, the big areas were North Kelsey here and Kesselman Hanford. I believe you said you have interest in expanding out here, however, you didn't want the height.
Right. Okay. We also have the ability to increase height, and developers can do lot consolidation. We've acquired a couple of properties, so like West Main, thoughts about like West Main getting taller, 3, 4, 5 stories, mixed use residential. Yeah, basically from where we're sitting right now down to the, you know, down toward the prison.
I don't see why not.
And the only reason why I'm asking the question is, as you're answering the question, I'm hoping you're not just constrained to geographic regions that you mentioned. So this is a big picture discussion. So I'd like you to feel unconstrained in that.
I'm totally open to that. I think anytime we're talking about going above the 45-foot threshold, we should just examine area by area, case by case.
Yeah.
So if you're asking me for the West Main Street case, I would be open to that.
Okay, sounds good. Thank you, Councilmember Hanford. Councilmember Gamble.
Yeah, no, I also wanted to speak to a little Kurt, what you brought up about, you know, being priced out.
The old people get
no.
The young people too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Priced out both ends.
I guess the one thing I would point to there is there's an argument that could be made, you know, if you talk about, hey, my property tax is going up, that sort of thing, because the value of my house keeps going up. There's an argument to be made that that this would actually help. Not going to stop it, but, you know, it might, you know, you're not putting in a whole another 200 to 300 homes at $500,000 to $700,000 price range right around the corner for you, which drives you up more affordable. You know, you're growing in the MDU multi dwelling unit, you know, space. I don't know. I like it just because I've seen. I think it's the think is the phrase, the biggest small little town around. If that makes sense, where you create that multi-dwelling unit or even the multi-dwelling unit where they actually have retail below. I know we've talked about that before. And Councilmember Hanford brought up all the stuff that I was going to say as far as, you know, we don't have a lot of options left. The more that you get in the city limits, paying taxes, paying, you know, and those multiple dwelling units, there's a lot of water hookups here, there, trying to think of different income sources that are coming from those properties by going out. I think the quote that resonates with me the most is the one that you just used, is that, you know, you can't stop growth, but you can manage it and try to, you know, say, hey, what makes sense based off of our plan, the strategic plan, and where we want to go. And when you look at that area and you talk about walking around, and we're talking about hotels, we're talking about, you know, restaurants and wineries and breweries, it's a chicken and an egg scenario, right? You build a restaurant, people come, and you have people when the restaurant comes, type scenario. And we don't have a lot of this type of multi-dwelling unit type, nice multi-dwelling unit type, you know, stuff in the city that we hate. If we get more of a bistro type or restaurant or whatever, let's get like 10 Adams. Jeff Adams didn't hear me say that. But you know what I'm trying to say.
Okay. Ms. Hester?
So I was just going to maybe add to that a little bit when we talk about potential resources or revenue sources, and this is something that Ms. Knight and I have talked about, which she kind of brought to my attention as well. With the shift to destination-based sales taxes, light industrial manufacturing doesn't pay like it used to, versus, you know, more and more people, we're changing our habits, we're buying more online. And, you know, if the South Dakota versus Wayfair case goes the way everybody hopes and thinks it will in June, having that higher density also helps with bringing in additional tax revenue through sales taxes in town, which then could have the potential of helping to at least mitigate potential property tax issues. So that's something else to maybe consider as you're thinking about this.
She does make you sound nice.
Before I go back to Councilmember Cutback and Councilmember Scarborough, Councilmember Davis, what are your thoughts here?
Well, first of all, heighten the adjustments for West Main. I think that's appropriate. That would be a good place to do it. And thinking about the Kelsey here, first thing that comes to my mind is this, for example, what the new building that's going on around Bothell, and that's what I think of when I see that. I think that would fit really well in Kelsey Way area, and it would go well. Would be a good just a good mix there. So I think that's also very appropriate to look at and think about it. But in other areas, I think in case by case, we'll see the discussion about it. What else would you be able to do?
Thank you. Councilmember Scarborough.
Please understand my position isn't that I, because of my age group, thinking we shouldn't do it, because I realize there's a selfish look. And that's what my job look is. My job is to think about the role, not first. I like the idea that Councilman Davis talks about in the North Kelsey area, and that it does create the people in those markets have town to go to, and restaurants, Lowe's or whatever, they probably don't need a lot of Lowe's. But the restaurants and entertainment. I think that's a good idea. And then I would ask two questions for Mr. Hanford. It sounds like what is your objection to them being on that in the town? Are we talking about the Dodge Weaver?
Yeah, you know where the veterinarian is?
Yes.
Yeah, so behind the veterinarian.
I'm on that hill, okay?
There you go.
And what would be your objection to that? I could see where it doesn't have the accessibility to the restaurants we're talking about, so that'd be a long walk or a drive downtown, but what, why do you feel like you'd not like to see it down there?
4 or 5, 6 stories in Southwest.
It's a good question.
And the other question is, I heard you say something about, you know, like in the Kelsey area, it was going to be garages underneath. Is there a reason why we wouldn't want to see stores underneath with housing above and see garages, or is that also area thinking and a case by case basis? Because I can see at this end of town, garages underneath because there's no need for stores underneath. Or at this end of town, you might want the stores underneath. I don't know why anybody wants to go to a store in the first place, but that seems to be where things are going. And then as you go over 196, when you go over the Lincoln, you see all of those huge, huge housing projects. I think they're, I don't know if they're shagging or not, they might be, but they're, I'm talking city blocks, which is some, is kind of what I'm hearing you're thinking we might want to put on North Kelsey. As you see those, is that what you envision on North Kelsey? Or you, is that what you see?
So just a couple things. One, there's a limited amount of space there at North Kelsey too. So as you're getting the images in your head, I know there's a smaller area of space, and you've hit a couple different subjects. So you still have the floor, but I think that Ms. Knight wanted to respond to something, and then we'll certainly come back to Councilmember Hanford to respond.
Right, I wanted to respond to the comment about why wouldn't you want to put retail on the bottom of the multifamily. And what they found, and Mr. Swanson can weigh in on this too, is that that hasn't been as successful as they had originally hoped. Mm-hmm. And so what you see now is just Mr. Swanson described, and what I've been seeing in Redmond recently, is there's this parking on the bottom, and they just do the end caps in retail as opposed to putting a whole another level of retail. And then what you're seeing down in Redmond, and that's exactly what you're seeing now in Redmond, which is the apartment, the parking on the bottom floor, the wrap on the end, and then all of the retail across the street.
Yeah.
And that's what they're calling horizontal as opposed to
horizontal mixed use.
Yeah.
And that's what I think we are going to be seeing when we bring back the proposal on the North Kelsey side.
That feels good.
Right.
And I'd also like to ask us not to be constrained in terms of what our current land use is. So as you're thinking about Southwest, if that area does become part of the city, recognize that just like with Smith Volley Bridge when it built out, or Redmond Bridge, it's possible as part of our zoning that we would do here on our comp plan to set up so that there'd be a commercial node. One of the things that I've heard from people is that they really value having a small supermarket on the west side of town, so that people on the, you know, people on this side of town wouldn't need to hop on Highway 2 and get in, you know, traffic to go to Bret Meyer. It'd be nice to be able to just go to that side of town.
How about on the corner of railroad tracks and Fryland Boulevard, where we'd like to bulldoze the eyesore?
Yeah, so part of the problem with that then would be the airport with occupancy, right? So, but just for the Southwest, I would just have everybody think outside of where we are today. There's synergy with the downtown, with redevelopment around the downtown, and also there's the opportunity to create new nodes. Ms. Knight, did you have something
to do? I did. I want to just address, you know, where that multifamily should be, and you suggested perhaps the what we're calling now the white elephant on the corner of Fryland Boulevard and 2, is that those intersections though with US 2 are really prime real estate now.
Mm-hmm.
And so we don't want to be putting houses on that prime real estate that hasn't really needs to be pulled back.
I wouldn't put it living there because of the trains, but I can see a grocery store along one level there, but I'm sure it's more expensive property.
Yeah,
One of the cool things about the idea of Southwest is you could have commercial up against 522 that's visible from 522 that may have synergy with people living in that area, like a grocery store. And then have higher density, behind it, to the south and the west.
I haven't seen up on Old Hill and having a grocery store in the park. That's good to get there without having to go across some tracks.
Right, as Ms. Hassert mentioned, though, that shopping habits are changing, and so I think we're going to be a future of delivery as opposed to we go out and get things and bring them back home again. So again, grocery stores are really difficult these days. I know. It's true, though.
Here's that 70-year-old mentality. I'm going to order my grocery.
You can now call ahead to Walmart, have your stuff ordered online, and just go and pick it up. Pretty soon it'll just be delivery.
I have my whole entire 3 days of meals delivered to my house every week.
Beautiful. Hey, any further customers?
Yeah, I'm smart enough to do that.
Councilmember Hanford, yes, a couple questions. Did you want to respond to those questions?
Yes.
Go for it.
Yes, what? Well, I'm trying to remember the question.
Yes,
what are you
building
at that independence?
What's that?
Why are you prohibiting and building at that independence?
Oh, yeah. That was just. I don't know, probably just personal preference, or I don't know. I'd be open to that. Case by case.
I'm with case by case.
Okay. What was your other question about the parking garage, right?
Parking garage. I've got my answer.
Okay, yeah.
We've answered.
Yeah, everything, what I saw around the makes a lot of sense.
Because I don't know what the trends are, and that was good information.
Now you can look around the way you're
trying. Yeah. And the other thought is, there's already a lot of retail down there. I mean, sure, there's room for more. But if you look at North Kelsey, there's a lot of retail. You can buy pretty much every kind of food that you want within that area. And if you were to place an apartment complex right in the heart of it, you would be within a 3-minute walk to any kind of food you could ever want.
And it's on a
with existing businesses.
And it's on a bus route.
Yeah.
And then we just need to get community transit to start running more frequent buses down 522.
Yeah.
And there's medical there.
And
every other kind of aspect here. So.
And then we're back to here's Cutback's ability for traffic to handle.
Okay, I think
they're answering the
chicken and egg.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, walk it in. Councilmember Cutback, you had your son?
No, I'm going to make sure I understood. So you're not against apartment buildings there. You were originally not thinking of ship stories.
Oh.
But now you're...
Yeah, I'd be open there.
Okay. Because it sounded like from Ben that, we're just making it profitable. They don't want to ship stories.
Yeah.
Right? So that would be the only thing.
I guess if I had my choice, I would push them more towards North Kelsey than Southwest.
Yeah. And of course, we're talking about a 32-year period of time from now to 2050.
Right. Well, I'm talking sooner than that.
Yes, absolutely.
I'm talking like this year.
Yes. Well, we might be able to help there. So.
Depending on the land.
Yeah, what I'm trying to balance here is the short term, but also the 2050. So let's go to the policy questions that. So we're going to, since everybody's computers are dying because of lack of power, we're going to go ahead and we're going to pull up the memo and scroll down to the policy direction. Because what's going to happen then is that the comments that we submit to the PSRC, the communication that we're doing, the background information we need to collect and everything to support this, we need to know what your desired target population number is. That allows us then to build the case and make comments accordingly. So then, Mr. Swanson, so the policy question is whether the city should request increased densities. The number that was being discussed here is just a target number. Was that 30K? And we haven't given you like details about what that means, but thoughts on that number?
Well, it's taken 110 years to get to 16K and 25 on the community community.
So
is it up to 30,000 in 10?
going to?
We're talking at 3%, 3.5% growth rate over the course of all the way to 20, over the course of 30 years. Anybody have any concerns about that based on the information you have right now?
3% or 3.5?
Yeah, 3 to 3.5. So we're, okay. Do you have anything else?
I don't think that's fair to me.
So let's go down to the very bottom. Not the alternatives, but the okay, recommendation. So review the PSRC population employment projections for the year 2050. Discuss City of Monroe employment population goals for 2050. Did we do that? We talked about population. How about employment?
Employment goals would probably, you know, trend with population and compare to, you know, how much land we have available, which isn't a lot, and then how much if we, that's gone down. But the Southwest study area, if we want to allocate additional commercial land down there, could increase it also. And employment is one of those constant things that we're trying for. You know, and what, that's one of those, if we can get more of it, we're constantly going after that, because that's probably the more difficult of the numbers that Puget Sound Regional Council has, which kind of gives us the hit, is the employment numbers.
Okay, so we haven't, there hasn't been a number allocated or discussed yet for the city. So what we're going to be taking as a takeaway is about a 3 to 3.5% increase per year, because it's the average growth rate we've been seeing through 2050. And I understand that there's a willingness to go to roughly a 6-story building in different areas of town, and there's an interest in expanding our urban growth area to the southwest, as opposed to marching up the hill to the north. Okay. All right. Anything further? Okay. Councilor, do you have anything further to say?
I have one more.
Yes, Councilor Starburn.
We were talking about places for the growth downtown, for the shop, or there's wine industry. Remember, we were talking about wineries in Fryland, in the first two blocks off of Fryland Boulevard. How does that fit into what we're talking about? Because those people would have to come across the tracks and go to those wineries. Are those wineries, you know, could they be thought of as not so good of an idea? So, or are we talking about things like Harry's and those kind of wineries and restaurants being conducive to putting growth at the southwest end of town?
So we're going to have a better idea on that, Community Attributes Inc., to do a study involving the wineries and how we should look at our light industrial area. Because you're exactly right, you know, we talked about employment allocations and you know, these things get chewed up from, you know, say like manufacturing jobs, it could potentially lose an opportunity for employment. Say a winery comes in and it only offers half the number of employees, that could be hurting us. We don't know that yet. So we have this, it was a company, we actually interviewed them a few months back. Came about really well, very knowledgeable, and they actually specialize in the industrial area. So we're going to go through a study with them. It's partly for our zoning code update, and then partly kind of to answer this question in the long term. So we'll have a much better idea once we get back with them.
Any other questions? Mr. Swanson, anything further?
I don't have anything else.
Ms. Knight, anything further?
No, I think we're good.
We have no further business this evening. Is there a motion for adjournment?
Salute.
Second.
I have a motion for adjournment from Councilmember Campbell.
A second for Chief
Pressner. A second from Councilmember Cutback. Any discussion on the motion?
Oh, it fell.
Seeing none, all in favor of adjournment, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Aye, aye. Abstentions?